Hi, welcome to Blogging Heads. I'm Ben Jacobs. I'm the managing editor of the Daily Download, and today I'm talking about the wonderful, strange, bizarre, quasi-corrupt world of New York politics with Harry Siegel, senior editor from Newsweek Daily Beast, and handsomely bearded man.
And occasionally your editor.
Occasionally. Only occasionally now. Once more than occasionally, but always an inspiration. But want to start off, Harry has a great piece up on The Beast this morning with Michael Moynihan about Michael Bloomberg, or Little Berlusconi, as you call him, about he's trying to buy the Financial Times. And just, yeah.
It's a funny story in that you have the sense that the reporter may have bumped into the mayor at a cocktail party. They tend to run in some similar circles, mm-hmm. because all this has been rumored about and reported before, and it's not quite clear. There's a couple of quotes from sources close to the mayor, one of which I think might be the mayor, but not terribly much in the way of new information. But what's incredibly useful, if you're Bloomberg, is without actually spending lots of money to buy, say, The Times or FT and its half stake in The Economist, none of which, incidentally, are for sale, you get a lot of sway with the press, which has many of us have no reason to go too far out of our way to bite the hand that might feed us with the guy who might end up owning The Times or the FT and is already paying tons of journalists. So this is sort of how he handled his presidential trial balloons in 08 and less seriously in 2012, is let's soak up as much press as possible before actually putting any money in or doing terribly much else. It seems to work.
So this is just a press strategy to soak up the news for the last year of his administration?
No, I think he'll probably buy one of these papers. But in the meantime, he benefits tremendously without actually spending much, without spending any money.
And there are a lot of beat journalists at the Daily News who have aspirations to work for the Financial Times covering the Singapore Copper Exchange.
That's big. Look, Bloomberg is paying people really well. Like Bloomberg View is paying, you know, $1,500 columns, half a million salaries. It's serious money. People in this business, you know, they don't get into it for the money, but they're then every bit as receptive to small marginal incentives as Republicans would like to believe all of us are in terms of the decision-making process. So these things get noticed. And, yeah, it is a way of passing over some of the last year in office.
Yeah, I guess that's a healthy way to spend time. And I guess in terms of how that year in office is shaping up, I mean, is this at this point just sort of the he's taking it easy in New York and not jumping into anything else nationally?
Well, you know, he did just create his own awesome vanity super PAC and take one of his deputy mayors, which is a cool thing you can do when you're a mayor and also a plutocrat, Howard Wolfson. Mm-hmm. And, say, hey, you're on break, and you're going to go work for my outside political operation now, trying to influence House races, basically, which you did with some success, with some limited success in a couple races in California, but not terribly well. And then once that's done, you can hop back on board and help me deal with Sandy and so forth. But it's an interesting set of revolving doors. Most of his most powerful deputy mayors have come from or ended up at his private company immediately after, and then say things like, I am happy to remain in the Bloomberg family. Somehow this is not seen as a conflict of interest because reporters, for the most part, are morons.
Or just interested in possibly being adopted by the Bloomberg family, as you suggested earlier.
That would be an odd turn of events. It'd make a nice little sitcom. But let's move on to the somewhat more immediately relevant New York, New Jersey characters. Bloomberg at the most is going to be an 80-year-old man who's mayor of New York. No one ever does anything after. Will be a money interest in 2016, if that. So
I was about to suggest moving on to the other person in New York City known for his lack of ego, Governor Andrew Cuomo.
A simple, humble man.
Simple, humble man who just wants to spend time with Sandra Lee and Malcolm Smith on the farm.
My colleague here, David Friedlander, had a good piece up about the left getting increasingly annoyed with Cuomo, who has chosen not to proceed in this very complicated New York State Senate situation, where New York is a solid blue coastal state. It is not in any real sense a two-party competitive state. However, the state senate, for complicated reasons involving gerrymandering, six would-be coups in the last 12 years, total dysfunction, and highly entertaining criminals, has been basically Republican for 60 years now. This year, the Democrats won a couple more seats than the Republicans, which in a traditional democracy would suggest that the Democrats would be in charge. However, many of these said Democrats, and a largely white group of them, have said, nah, we're just going to be an independent set of Democrats, caucus with the Republicans, and take some power. The last time this happened, it got undone because the dysfunctional amigos who did it all ended up getting arrested and broadly humiliated, which didn't stop them from staying in and continuing to run for office. This time it's happened again, and Cuomo, who real liberals, Richard Brodsky, for instance, the former state assemblyman, who's now with Demos, have been attacking for a long time as a congressive, who's willing to be very liberal on social policy issues, like, for instance, gay marriage, which Cuomo took a very active and assertive role on, in exchange for which he's been quite conservative on fiscal ones. So now, I don't think he really minds having a dysfunctional Senate and one with Republicans having some sway, rather than being the titular head of a true one-party system where all the pressure is for him to move to his left, which is not in his interest if he has national ambitions, which he certainly appears to. So Cuomo wrote a hilarious, hideously written op-ed that he clearly penned himself, full of strange philosophical phrases about how you all sort your own shit out and leave me out of it, which has now infuriated Democrats, and particularly minority Democrats. Sharpton's taken a very assertive role to say, so you're going to abandon the party and you're going to let the white guys screw the minority members of the state Senate out of power. So for the first time in quite a while, he's feeling a little bit of a squeeze. However, anytime you start talking about Albany, we all stop caring. In fact, when anything bad happens in upstate New York, we all stop caring. Like, if 35 people die in a blizzard in Buffalo, it's below the lottery results. Like, we don't know here in New York that the rest of the state exists. So I can't see Cuomo really taking much damage here.
And though I guess there was the entire, you know, in terms of nationally, Chris Hayes, I think, going on a tear with, not that Chris Hayes is the world's biggest viewership, but it's those who view him tend to, you know, all have their own blogs. That he's already taking some pressure and some hits. And, you know, I mean, how much does that matter for 2016 for a guy who's rumored to want to run for president?
This is what it means to be a governor and an executive, right? Is Cuomo has to deal with the state as it is. And if it's reasonably successful and he passes the fairly low bar set by his criminal and moron predecessors, he'll be judged fairly well. He's actually in a much better position on those terms than Christie is, for reasons we'll get into, because it's hard to see sort of the progress Christie's made up until now in Jersey getting built on and sustaining. Mm-hmm. In New York, there does seem to be a path for that. There's reasonably low-hanging fruit that Cuomo's gone after. And he's gotten credit for things he's largely deserved them for. Like, the government is much less dysfunctional than it was under Elliot Spitzer, speaking of egomaniacs in love with their own brains. David Paterson, who proved that a blind guy had no business being a governor. It's sad that he wasn't able to become senator, which is what he really would have liked. Where you have a staff, and he would have been perfectly fine at the job, leaving aside, you know, drugs, adultery with staff members, dysfunction, and everything else that makes Paterson so freaking awesome.
But that's just part of being in the U.S. Senate, I thought.
That's part of the charm, absolutely.
Yeah.
Nobody really cares what happens in the state Senate. And when you have a bunch of proxy guys like Chris Hayes who try to pretend that this is going to matter, where the Cuomo's left the reservation, they're just trying to create a little counterpoint with somebody who's increasingly becoming a national player. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to create that pressure because it doesn't naturally exist, because constituents in New York and as a national story don't really care about this, and nor do they have much reason to. Both parties are fairly corrupt, fairly dysfunctional, and increasingly answer to the same ideas and set of interests. So,
That's deeply even cynical by your standards.
But I got up early with some grouchy.
Fair enough, and I guess in terms of states that are less cynical and believe in hope and change, Chris Christie in New Jersey is possibly facing Cory Booker for governor this next year. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't know if you have any thoughts on Cory Booker, governor, senator, president, superhero, the phenomena that's taking over all of our Twitter feeds.
Cory Booker exists to charm the shit out of money types in Manhattan. Who need a national horse to back. He exists to be the protege of Mayor Michael Bloomberg, to be the charm silly and both ways with the Gates Foundation, to be sort of the receptacle of a kinder urbanism with a very big role for business. And in places business doesn't traditionally go, like into the public schools. Mm-hmm. That's fine. I have no strong feelings on that one way or the other, but his huge national profile, combined with, well, being a very appealing guy who does appealing things, Newark has not had an incredible turnaround. In fact, Christie has a better argument to make with New Jersey statewide than I think Booker does. We're leaving aside the city council rebellion there, involving, among others, I'll come right back to that, but the city council rebellion there.
Yeah.
I'm getting my icons flipped. And he's got this glide path to be a senator in a couple of years. New Jersey has two unimpressive senators. The older one is 90. They only elect Democrats. And there's nobody else who has the profile to run statewide. And Jersey is stupid expensive to run in statewide because it doesn't have its own media market. Mm-hmm. And it has two really expensive ones in New York and Philly.
Number one and number four. Yeah, they're the number one and number four most expensive media markets in the country.
Right. So why would he want to run against Christie in what becomes a giant national proxy race, which, like all national proxy races in reasonably off years, attracts undue attention, outside money, running against a reasonably popular incumbent who's gotten very high marks for his storm response, higher, in fact, than Obama, than Cuomo, than Bloomberg, who all rated pretty well. I just don't see how he would benefit from that. I think pretty obviously he'd rather be an executive, but, you know, if you're young and ambitious and half a sociopath, thus a good politician, you take what you can get.
Mm-hmm. True, though I still see in terms of the amount of ego and the amount of pressure there, that he's, you know, his race versus Christie becomes quasi-presidential in its coverage because it's all in the 95 category corridor.
It would be the closest thing to the Rudy Hillary matchup that would have been for the press corps.
It would be. Christie has his Springsteen obsession. You know, Cory Booker is an African American Rhodes Scholar who had the Jewish students group at Stanford despite not being Jewish. I mean, it's. The combination of those two, that there may be as a handsome sociopath, as you mentioned, that he still has the glide path in 2014. It's hard to imagine the hit he takes by running against Christie, and it, you know, gets him out of Newark, which has its own fringe benefits.
Christie's a prosecutor, and as our mutual friend John Avalon is fond of pointing out, prosecutors tend to have, and it was a good one, by the accounts of many people who work for him, he tend to have a very different style of speech giving and stumping.
Yeah.
They tend to be very direct, more extemporaneous, and less rhetoric oriented, and to sort of aggressively bullet point push a case. Booker has a narrative that doesn't make terribly much sense to anyone who's paying close attention to Newark, including people who really like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea that he toppled a political machine, which was awesome. Of course, that political machine also came to office as promising young reformer here. And now is trying to effect change there. He has not been terribly successful, and the intelligent political thing to do, you know, as per Baltimore and Maryland, even The Wire, is get out. While you're still getting praise for what you have, what bit you have managed to do.
Yeah.
Running against Christie, who will puncture that narrative and has been openly signaling that, is not necessarily a move in his interest. If he pulls it off, obviously, he would be a bright shining star. But even then, he'd still be one of the little stars in this constellation under the blinding one that is Hillary.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hillary is, you know, she's a
longtime Yankees fan.
I'm dedicated to the state of New York until it turns out. I get the feeling that she's starting to abandon the Yankees for the Iowa Cubs. That's she's really triple A Pacific Coast baseball is what really moves her. I mean, do you have any sense of whether she's running? Because that seems to be the $1 million question. And I know you hang out with Bill and Ron Burkle's airplane all the time.
Well, one of my favorite rumors that's been circulating ridiculously for quite a while now is that Mr. Michael Bloomberg, who will be presumably Mr. by that point and not in his fourth term as mayor, and is the 10th wealthiest guy in America and first or second wealthiest in New York, might just bankroll a Clinton run. This will not happen, but it's a great, great rumor. And it would put all these strands together so nicely. I'm trying to give it all the momentum I can. If she thinks she might want to run, this is how you play this, right? It's like you take a step back, you figure out how to make money in ways that aren't going to disqualify or really compromise that for a bit. And you steal a bit of time. You also let the last of this Benghazi stuff pass. Don't reemerge as quickly. I think she really regrets how early she started running last time and what an endless race that made it seem to be. And assess. A figure she might want to study who came back from a devastating and unexpectedly ugly defeat is Mr. Governor Andrew Cuomo, who was badly humbled in his first run for governor when he ran against H. Carl McCall, the comptroller at the time, and a powerful black politician in the state and a credible guy, and did just well enough to hamstring McCall, drop out, destroy the Liberal Party. We won't get into a fusion balance and cross ticket stuff in New York here, unless Ben wants to talk about the Independence Party, which is in the news of late. But anyways, he had a disastrous run. He exploded his career. Broadly embarrassed himself, infuriated Democrats in the state, and especially black and Latino ones, and seemed to be nothing. And then Spitzer emerged as the shining star, and he's taken a very disciplined, rigorous, mostly press-avoiding, leaving aside New York Post man, Fred Dickert.
Yeah.
He's mostly stayed clear of the press, and Dickert is writing his semi-authorized biography right now. Maybe partial.
Compared to that makes the narrative of 18 million cracks in the glass ceiling that much more appealing if you're comparing it to Andrew Cuomo in 2002. But she's really right now the one that's sort of lurking, because if she jumps in, Cuomo doesn't jump in. Cuomo doesn't jump in. Jill Brand doesn't jump in. It's all.
We'll see. People said this sort of thing sort of in 2008, and Hillary Clinton was the 800-pound politician, and she did not get to sit wherever she wanted.
I guess it's a question what happens 4 or 8 years later, and it'll be interesting to see how she moves and how she emerges.
Ben, is it too soon to start talking about 2020?
I actually, no. I think we need to go into 2048. I think that's really the race that needs to happen. But no, 2020, if you have any pressing thoughts.
Yeah, I think our democracy is sort of fucked. And that we're talking about someone like Gillibrand potentially running for president, who was given the Senate seat, has never actually had to run in a serious way for it, because the state is overwhelmingly Democratic, leaving the state Senate aside. Mm-hmm. So put together a reasonably competent record in the way you do when you're a junior member of a powerful legislative body who gets handed a few things. Think Barack Obama in his 2 years as a national figure before getting elected president. Much of it spent running.
He wrote a couple books.
This is unserious. And it worries me. It worries me after the same people who are appalled with Bush. And the people wanted to have a beer with him were thrilled to have a cup of coffee with Obama, and that we seem to be getting away from having a minimal baseline of things you've done. And in fact, if you do things for very long, it becomes a real impediment against running for higher office.
No, and I think you'd agree, and I think the reason we're also talking about all these New York folks is that it's also about access to money. And if you're running for office and you're successful in New York, you have access to a really spectacular amount of money, which is part of the reason why Jill Brand gets mentioned, that she's done just enough, sets a minimal level of competence, and can raise an ungodly amount of money.
That is an excellent point. It trumps the point I was going to make about how the New York Press Corps and the Northeastern Press Corps going down to the Mid-Atlantic is deeply narcissistic and very concerned with the figures we're closest to.
No, I think that's part of it, too. In New York, the New York press does tend to promote its figures, political figures, in a slightly more inflated way. And I, going back to Andrew Cuomo, I still cannot concede Andrew Cuomo winning them in Dubuque.
I mean, Cuomo's done a couple of things really well. He had the worst, most dysfunctional, embarrassing predecessors imaginable, which helps.
So he already hit the no hooker bar. He's surpassed that so far as we know.
Even the no affairs with staffers bar, which I'm not sure if that's higher or lower, but so far, that's actually a slightly higher bar, but not very high. So great. Herded a state with a lot of easy dysfunction to deal with. He took a simultaneously morally right and politically intelligent stance on gay marriage that did a lot for him. It gave him space and leverage with both of the legislative bodies in the state. It gave him a better relationship with Michael Bloomberg, who's the other egomaniac in the room, and the governor-mayor relationship is always very complicated because they were on the same side of that issue, although they scrupulously avoided ever being at sort of the same press conferences, same dinners, anything else about it. And he earned a ton of national credit for that. He's benefited, as has the mayor, from national policies that have arguably been bad for the country, but have unquestionably been good for New York in terms of keeping interest rates ridiculously low and reinflating Wall Street. Wall Street's like our company town. So like, if you're in California and you're the attorney general, you don't go, like, trust bust Hollywood. Like, they all scheme together to decide when films open, and that's fine. But Bloomberg, who is, a card-carrying member of the business community and a true plutocrat, it's the first mayor we've had in a long time who does this directly. He defends Wall Street right or wrong, tooth and nail, all the time. I don't like that, but there is a serious argument to be made. It's a sensible thing for the mayor of New York to do. Cuomo, too, as in Broadway's, I think, embraced the money. He's very into campaign finance reform, but he has his own secretive committee, which every time little details trickle out of who's involved, it's like casinos that want to do much more business in New York are backing up his reform committee to clean up government. And we're not even as bad as Jersey, but it is corrupt.
Yeah, it's you're assuming that casinos have no interest in good government. These are not business enterprises dedicated to campaign finance, civil service reform, making sure they're the League of Women Voters with roulette tables.
All I'm saying is casinos are basically evil, and there's a serious case to be made that insurance companies are too, which are basically the same setup. Like the house wins. Read your can, study up. There are real moral problems with this. Casinos obviously have some unique ones. Largely, that Atlantic City did all right because it had no competition. When you see the business plans for any new casino, and New York now has its first casino in the city, it's a racino. It's
an aqueduct.
A lottery thing. It's nominally a lottery, but it plays exactly like slot machines, poker, all these other games. It's fairly ridiculous to route around a prohibition in the state constitution. But these things don't make money unless more people gamble and lose. So you have a tax on the poor and the innumerate. And if you spend time at one of these places, and they need to build new gamblers, they can't all just compete for the same share.
Yeah.
They're like adult daycare and moron daycare and superstitious person daycare. They are very, very depressing. They provide no social benefit. They do create revenue for the state. So in the same way that, like, pot legalization happens a lot more quickly when governors, as executives, are like, I have to fill this budget hole. Here is a revenue source I could capitalize on, casino spread, for the same reason.
And
the difference is, there really is an almost unlimited market for drugs. And there's actually a quite limited one for gambling that you have to build and expand, especially when you're competing with more and more states. So you have to create new suckers, and that is not what government should be doing.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to be relatively hard to create new suckers at this point.
It is. Remarkably, we may be sucker saturated.
But I guess with pot legalization, then it just has the government encouraging kids to just say yes.
That'll get interesting. I think about how the sale of Lucy's is prohibited, ostensibly to protect minors, how that math has changed. Cigarettes have gone from like $3 a pack to mm-hmm. a Manhattan 13, 14. And the ways in which policies that are supposed to both generate revenue and serve socially progressive goals tend to conflict internally.
Yes.
And bear a lot of tension, and how they tend to become, like expanded gambling, really, really aggressive. So an evil guy, who I can't mention, has been intimately involved in the gambling issue and with several of the politicians we've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
his whole thing, smoker's cough, is more progressive.
Yeah.
And what he means by more progressive is it's not good enough to have poor, stupid people gambling. We need to create a class of rich, stupid people. They need to be able to swipe a card at Starbucks and join lotteries. And progressive is the word he uses, and it's brilliant. Because it doesn't mean get less poor people doing it. It actually means building in. But they're not terribly important. There's not enough money there.
Yeah.
Your guy is losing $200 and like a third of his benefit check every couple of weeks. You need to get rich people doing the same thing, or this market doesn't work. And that's what the country is moving toward. Go back and read your Ashbury. Selby.
Yeah, but it's so basically the future of gambling lies with more baccarat tables.
Read Sucker's Progress.
Okay.
It is fantastic. Don't see the movie Gangs in New York. It's terrible. What I got.
Okay, and we've been talking a lot about Bloomberg, that there's a mayor's race going on to succeed him, and mayors in New York had normally been these outside characters, Bloomberg, Giuliani, Ed Koch, that they've become national figures who host Saturday Night Live, have egos and personalities, and this may be the least colorful group of candidates for any elected office in the United States, down to dog catcher in Alabama.
Nah. They have no careers, right, after being mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of the last 20 years, which is a fluky, fluky run, it's generally about a generation between outsiders. I'm not sure you're right to entirely sketch Koch's one.
As a big personality and a big, you know, not so much as it, but these are sort of people who show up and become national figures right away, and no one there fits that description.
Mm-hmm. And a few things to note. Those national figures almost never try to appoint their own predecessor,
mm-hmm.
Which this mayor is frantically trying to do. And it remains to be seen how he's going to use the new post-Citizens United world to employ his money in that goal, as well as obviously his connections with the business community, his earned political power. But this field, these 2013 ones, this will be a fun and interesting race. People think. I'm not so sure. When Mark Green was in his crowded four-way race primary in 2001, but he ends up losing very surprisingly to Bloomberg. And all these years later, it's hard to remember what an unlikely win Bloomberg had and how many weird things had to come together, not least of them
9/11. Mm-hmm.
Rudy's weird plan to extend his term and Green going along with that. Green insulting black and Hispanic voters to the point where they sat out the race. Bloomberg spending $100 million, $86 million on the books, and assuredly considerably more. All this, and he barely sort of randomly wins. So Mark Green, early on in that race, has about the support of about a third of New Yorkers. And the remaining three significant candidates have about twice that.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the people who had a choice. This time. So he is one-third of the field.
Yeah.
This time, Christine Quinn, who is Bloomberg's that's the best I've got picked to replace him, and he owes her big time for getting him his third term, which also bought her a third term.
Yeah.
And saved her career from ending when she was in the midst of a fairly serious scandal involving the city council slush fund, but I digress. Christine Quinn is twice as popular as the rest of the field combined.
Mm-hmm.
As Stu Glozer, the mayor's former spokesperson, has pointed out. I'm not sold that this will be a competitive race in the Democratic primary. I'm very, very skeptical that after 20 years of Republican outside mayors, which, again, is something New Yorkers generally do once a generation,
yeah.
I think get really, really out of balance, because everything else is permanently Democratic or farther left than that. I think it would be very, very hard for any Republican to run a credible campaign, especially in the narrow window after the primary when the Republican is taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. That there, I guess there isn't the possibility that, you know, right now all the Republicans seem to be recruiting Democrats, and whether that changes the field that with Quinn as a Bloomberg acolyte, you could have Carrie Yon, who's a former Obama administration official, running as a Republican. And whether that creates a field where the Republican is actually running as the more nominally liberal candidate.
Well, Bloomberg is a lifelong Democrat who became a Republican to run in 2001 to avoid a primary, becomes an independent to try to set up a presidential run, you know, and has painted this as a virtue. I'm bigger than party. I can't be bought. And, you know, he's used them in an entirely instrumental way. And both parties have crumbled. The Republican Party here has long been a shell for hire. The Democratic Party is a bunch of sort of second stringers. And so there is the prospect of, and this is the state where the Liberal Party was frequently very, very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Inconsequential until it was destroyed in Andrew Cuomo's horrific 2002 run. And actually lost its ballot position. But it would not be stunning to see some of these would-be Republicans try and attack to the nominee's left on some issues. However, the whole thing is the business community lives in tremendous fear of the Working Families Party, of Bill de Blasio. John Liu won't be mayor.
John Liu probably won't run anyway.
He might run, but he won't be mayor.
Yeah.
And this whole two cities thing. Like, what do you mean there's two cities? What's good for the wealthy is good for all of us. Can't you figure it out? Has become the default position. And if any candidate takes the Democratic line who's will say those words, the two cities thing that goes back to Ferrer, there will be a very aggressive push to try to pick the next man. I'm deeply skeptical that will be successful. Bloomberg is such an aberration, so enormously wealthy, spent on a scale that we've never seen before, was extremely lucky to win the first time, deeply alienated New Yorkers with his third term push, and breaking. Without a referendum, term limits voters had voted for twice and clearly would have voted for to hold rather than letting him run again.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea we're going to again say we need what's best directly and immediately for the business community, for that is the interest of the city, seems ridiculous to me. I have a very hard time saying. I think there's more built-up frustration than people realize.
And so you think there's a window for de Blasio? There's a window for de Blasio there still? Because of the fact everyone's frustrated with Bloomberg, or that it still will be the Christine Quinn coronation?
We'll see. I mean, the Bloomberg people pulled this trick in 2009 after they infuriated everyone with the third term thing. Is there's no race here. Bloomberg will win. Go home. And so when Thompson, who did not run an especially impressive campaign, missed just 4 points out, it stunned most of the punditocracy.
And the Thompson numbers were very...
New York had had in almost a century. Everyone just sort of gave up. And that was what the Bloomberg people planned. And they said, we're going to crush him so badly, don't bother showing up, because they knew they couldn't win by very much.
Yeah.
Because the window was low. So Quinn is clearly the front runner. It has a lot of establishment support. Has a powerful mayor who's reluctantly, it seems, with this Hillary recruiting and all behind her. This is not, in any sense, a done deal. And when you see all these weird candidates pop up, Castaneda's, Loda, Ray Kelly, you know, our 300-year-old police commissioner, it indicates that there's not broad satisfaction with the field. Interestingly, Democrats seem very happy with their options.
Yeah, that they that none of them are particularly the options. Bill Thompson, the African-American former comptroller, Bill de Blasio, the 12-foot-tall public advocate who, you know, wife was recently, I guess, outed by the New York Post for being at one point an out lesbian, and Quinn, who is an out lesbian. That it's a very somehow diverse field, and the one guy who went out of that was Scott Stringer, who has now already been anointed comptroller, who just got the hell out of it. But it'll be an interesting setup with these folks. But I don't know. I suppose there'll be more time to ponder the mayoral field. I guess the pundit thing to do would be to cover the mayor's race in 2017 and 2021. But that's probably for another discussion, and you know, probably time to wrap stuff up. Thanks for joining us once again, Harry Siegel, the King of New York, the New York expert, who's a senior editor from the Daily Beast, and I'm Ben Jacobs, the managing editor of Daily Download for Blogging Heads. So thanks so much, and hope we didn't put you all to sleep.